burns. Sweat it out, wait my turn. Can you hear the drumming? There's a revolution coming. And now it is my honor to welcome Jeff Rizzo of Riz Knows, the founder, my friend, a guy that's building an incredible company. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great, Mark.
Now, you have come a long way since you and I have known each other for a while. I can remember you playing catch with the football out in the parking lot as your business was emerging. Are you still playing catch? Like, when you guys have downtime, are you still playing catch out there with the football?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's hanging for you.
That's right. Yeah, you got to get a little sweaty and then come back in midday.
So what's banging for Jeff Rizzo these days?
I think pretty much all day. You know, we probably take an hour in the middle of the day. It's probably a paid hour, actually. Mm. You're not going to be happy about that. But we probably take an hour in the middle of the day, and they play ping pong or play football or something, and they come and they get right back at it. There's not a whole lot of playing around during the day aside from that one little break.
Yeah, you guys work hard. You put a partner in your life that works extremely hard with Matt.
And
he's a good athlete. So you're out there playing catch with Matt, and you've got to go long. You've got to go pretty far because he can throw the ball like a mile.
Yeah, Matt definitely could have played a sport in college, whether it's football, baseball, basketball. He was an amazing pitcher. I mean, the guy's probably the best athlete I know.
So you guys, you got this business. It's Riz Knows. Why don't we give our audience a little bit of a background as to this company you built?
Yep, Riz Knows, the simplest way to put it is it's a consumer review website. So we just take popular consumer goods that people are interested in, Garmin watches, headphones. We've got a whole home division, couches, mattresses, that sort of thing. And we tell people, are they good or are they not good? What are some of the qualities we like and what we don't like? And that's all we do. We put it out there, and we're really good at search engine optimization. And so, you know, we figure if you make good content, that's only half the battle, right? You have to be able to, you know, equip everything so that people can actually find it. So that's probably the other half of what we do.
Okay, so make good content. What kind of content are you producing?
Reviews of products. So that's really all it is. And we're very lucky, right? We don't need to drum up an audience. We just find a popular product and we put out content, and we're really good at optimizing it for Google and Bing and Yahoo and that sort of thing. And people find it. As an example, we just entered the cooler space. So our office has about 57, 56 of the top cooler brands that we've been
cooler,
testing.
Cooler, like, is this something you put, like, an ice chest type thing?
Yeah, an ice chest. And so, you know, they search through the roof, and we're just trying to create good videos and good, you know, written content about it.
So I'm thinking of the business model here. You're doing these reviews and you're putting them on video. We all know that putting out content that is watchable, digestible, entertaining, or informational, or whatever, that's not easy to do. But walk us through that process, the learning process, of how you learned how to do something that was, I guess, people could watch. Because a lot of stuff people, you sort of click right through it.
Yeah. Really, there's only two things, right? You just have to have decent audio and decent video. And as long as the content is good, what you have to say is good, it's entertaining, it's helpful, it's insightful, it works. And, you know, people are so used to seeing homemade videos on YouTube that I think it's one of those situations where we try not to make ourselves look like a professional
studio. I do that every day.
Yeah, I mean, our goal is to say as many ums and buts and uhs
really?
To make it authentic. Because we figure that when we get a product, who do you trust? You trust your neighbors and your friends and your family, right? Some guy on the internet, if he's making videos about something, you don't know anything about him. But the quicker you can make a connection with them, the better. And so right. I try to act like I'm their friend. And in fact, I love many of the people that watch our videos, but it's about making the connection with them.
Well, they feel like they know you now. I've worn my Riz Knows shirt around town. You've hooked me up with a bunch of Riz Knows shirts, and when I wear it around, occasionally somebody will say, you watch Riz Knows, and I'm like, yeah, actually, I'm kind of bragging. I'm an investor into Riz Knows.
I give you a shirt, you loan me money. That's
well,
I'm just waiting on those interest-free loans.
It's been a good ride. But, you know, people have fallen in love with you. They've fallen in love with the channel. They know what they get. What they're going to get is something they can trust, but building that trust with an audience, I mean, it's not just the ums. I can't be.
Yeah. I'm just saying that there are little nuances, right? Like taking the time to pause. And there's so many radio show hosts that are really good at this, at creating a connection, even though you can't see them. But of course, the big thing is the content, right? What you have to say. And people consistently come back because they know that nobody pays me to say good or bad things. I mean, I turn down you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars probably per month.
So you're not like pitching for people's products. You're not going, hey, this is the best ice cooler in the world. Picture this, having your Bud Light in the ice chest. It's going to be great.
No, I honestly could care less. I don't care if they buy or what they buy, as long as they think of us when they think of products that are interesting to them. And I just want them to come back. Because at the end of the day, there's so many people that want to build an internet business, right? We are an internet business, and they want to build it as quickly as possible and make as much money today as possible. And you wouldn't invest in a company like that. We want to build it so that eventually one day, you know, it's bigger, it's more sustainable. We can possibly move on from the business one day. And I don't think you get that by just cutting corners and just trying to like hawk products. Nobody wants that.
No one wants to hawk the product, but they need to trust you, I guess. So, but what about the camera? So, you know, you see some people who are just not good in public speaking. They're not good on camera. Some people have kind of a knack. How did you know? How did you first find out you have that knack?
I didn't. I was trash. I had no idea what I was doing, you know. My first YouTube video. So I guess I should clarify this. So we have the YouTube channel. We have a few YouTube channels, one with 500,000 subscribers, one with 27,000 subscribers, something. And then we've got a few different websites. So the YouTube channels are really a marketing source for our websites.
Okay.
And the websites are really what we're really truly focused on, even though the YouTube videos are very important for us. But I was terrible with video, to answer your question. I mean, my first video, I got lucky that I was so lucky with this business. I just happened to find a category that nobody was in. And I just happened to started making videos at the right time.
Fitness, right? And you would take off your shirt and demonstrate the you know, the athletic equipment.
Yeah. Well, you know, I found it's very interesting. The internet is a very interesting place. So I would test products, and I started with the fitness stuff, and I noticed that I would make videos and I would show the data from me working out from a run or something, and I would get comments all the time like, "Oh, how do I even know you tested it?" And I'm thinking to myself, I just showed you the data.
Yeah.
So then it forced me to just go out and set a camera down and run, do a fake running shoot. And then all of a sudden that alleviated their concerns, even though that was a total fake scene of me running.
That's interesting.
They weren't satisfied by just the data.
The data, it was actually, if you were sweating a little bit, even if it wasn't a full workout, it was a simulated workout.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so you've got this, you know, camera presence. It's building an audience. Your audience has grown. I mean, any secrets? Okay, so you got to have the great audio. You got to have the great video. It needs to be authentic. But you mentioned the other thing is you need to find a way to get seen and get noticed and to optimize some of that content.
And it's all common sense stuff. So when I first started putting up videos, I was really lucky because there was nobody doing it. And it was at a time when Google was trying to actively push YouTube, because obviously they're integrated. Mm-hmm. And so I looked back after just a few weeks, maybe a month, and I was up to like over 100,000 views on like one or two videos. So it was crazy. It just took off from the beginning. And it was wild. It might not have been my first video, but one of my first videos. And then I just realized over time that there's so many nonsensical things that I was doing. Like I would just put up a video and it wouldn't even be titled properly. Mm-hmm. Or there's so many of the smaller things, right? And so now we're just really good at checking the boxes. Like, okay, we put up a video or we put up a website post. There's probably 15 things you want to make sure to do to, you know, so that you get the green light with Google.
Well, we were introduced by a good buddy, Brian Oliver, and he told me, and he's sitting right over there. He's my storytelling soulmate.
My soulmate, but he's not my storytelling soulmate.
He helps me tell the stories, the good stories, stories of winning. You know, you're always one of these guys that kind of keeps his cards close to the vest. And Brian told me that you were going to reveal some secrets about, like, how to get things optimized, how to win. So, I mean, so far it doesn't feel like you've let forth any secrets. What you said, you have the 15 piece checklist or 15 step checklist. I mean, what can you tell us that that most people don't know about how to optimize?
Okay, so if you want to build a YouTube business, what are the things you need to know?
Yes.
One, have a camera that shoots in HD. Two, have a lavalier mic. I know these aren't, but obviously these are sufficient because you have many cameras and a bunch of people. But have a lavalier mic. Those are the only two things you need in the way of equipment other than a computer. Then three, all you need to do is find a video that's in a space that's interesting and create a helpful video. And automatically the algorithm will naturally find it and it'll it'll push it to the top of the list if it's good. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, you need to tell Google what you're actually posting. So I see so many videos out there that are really good. Could be, you know, a review of maybe this microphone. And somebody puts it up and they say, this is my favorite microphone. Well, that might be fine for a title, but it's not optimized for Google. You know, what is the brand of the microphone, or what are some of the search terms that people are looking for? People don't search, this is my favorite microphone. They search best microphone for podcasting or best microphone for radio. So you may as well give it an optimized title. And then from there are many little, that's the big thing, right?
Okay.
Get the title correct. Second thing is,
hey Brian, we may need to do that on some of our videos. Can you, are you taking notes?
Yeah. the second thing is the YouTube thumbnail, right? People are so much more attracted to the thumbnail. And when you put up a video, part of it is...
The thumbnail is that picture of what the video is about.
Yeah, that's right. And so when you put up a video, you need the algorithm to understand what you're putting up, which is why the title is so important. And I know this is so rudimentary, but a lot of people don't know.
I think keeping it basic, yeah, because there are people at all stages.
Yep. So you got to get the title for Google. People don't really care about the title. They care about the picture. Just like, you know, your friends at Marquee Media, right? It's a digital billboard. So you got to get the billboard right. So optimize the billboard, very little text, you know, between, I'd say, no more than 5 words on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to have just a big, clear picture. If I'm looking at a microphone, got to have a big, clear picture of the microphone. It's got to have attractive colors. Boom, you stick it up there and you're good. And then beyond that, almost nothing else matters aside from, you know, stuff that you personally care about. So the description of the video, you can write a little bit more, but it's not even as close. It's nowhere as close to as important as the title.
And the title just so somebody will click on it, right? You need someone to click.
Yeah, well, you need to tell Google what it is.
Oh, it's not tell Google.
People don't even really care what the title is.
Okay.
It's just about the thumbnail or the billboard.
Okay.
So, you know, I think those two things, the description can be important, but it's small. You know, it's probably a 2 out of 10 compared to the title or the thumbnail. The tags are pretty inconsequential.
Hashtags are inconsequential?
Yeah, on YouTube, it doesn't really matter.
Why does it matter? Why do hashtags matter?
Well, hashtags is just a grouping of ideas, right? So if you want to click on a hashtag on Twitter, it's important, or on Facebook, but it means nothing on YouTube.
YouTube is
really
no big deal.
No.
Okay.
So it's about the title and the thumbnail. And really, I say these are secrets, but they're not really secrets. It's just so many people don't think about it.
How did you learn it, though? Did you read a book or you just played around with it?
I just started playing around with it. There's all sorts of services to help you optimize what people are searching for. So, you know, I watch a lot of sports talk radio, or I watch it on YouTube, and it kills me because I love the host. There's this guy, Colin Cowherd. I just love him. I don't know if you know Colin Cowherd.
I don't. I've heard of him, but I don't know.
It kills me because his team is really good at YouTube, but the one thing they miss is they don't optimize the titles of their videos, so it's nowhere near as optimized as it could be. Yeah. And it just kills me because his content is so amazing.
Watch people make mistake after mistake after mistake, and I know that you've... seen us struggle a little bit, and I mean, when did you know you had something, right? You, a lot of times in entrepreneurship, we struggle, we try to figure it out, you try to figure it out on your own, then eventually you maybe hire an expert, but like, when did you know, hey, I got something here?
You know, I really, probably when I brought Matt onto the team, but before that, I thought about quitting many times.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I wasn't making much money, and I had no idea how to build this. I had no idea of how to build a business online, and in fact, you know, I didn't realize this at the time, but I was one of probably the first people that was really building a business on YouTube. Probably like, you know, maybe 2 years before I was doing it, the business model didn't exist. So I was at the tip of that spear. And so I was learning everything anew. I didn't know how to do anything. You know, a couple of years before I was doing it, they weren't even running ads on YouTube videos.
Right.
So it was all new stuff. And
well, you were an investment banker. You came from the investment banking industry. Matt came later from the investment banking industry. So you are this finance guy, Oakmont High School, same high school as me, Berkeley, right? Went to Berkeley.
That's right.
Same college as my older brother. But thinking about that, so you got this successful finance career, and then this is a pretty huge departure. Was that a scary move? I mean, especially, oh, yeah. And then you get into it, and you're thinking about quitting. Was that,
I was working in my parents' garage, not making any money. It was like a huge blow to my ego. I thought I was going to quit many times. But, you know, you just eventually figure it out, right? And, I mean, my back was up against a wall, but I had something, right? I had one thing, and that was that I was getting great traction in the way of views and likes and engagement, and I was getting recognized here and there around town. So I knew I had something, even though I was making almost no money. I'm talking at the most $1,000 a month. Like, I was making no money.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And,
but you knew you were onto something because you knew you were a pioneer in the industry.
I had something. I mean, I had to be worth something. And this was at the time when nobody cared about YouTube. It was a laughing stock. Even when I reached out, you know, because part of the economics of the business model is you have to go either purchase the product or get it sent for free to you.
Okay.
Because otherwise,
to test the product, right? You want to test an ice chest? They send you like a free ice chest, or you?
Well,
go buy
now
it?
We're at the point where I really don't care. I don't want to so much get it from the brands because I don't want to have to deal with any timing issues, them feeling like you owe them anything. I don't even really care. Let's just put it this way: I'm not being swayed by a $200 cooler. Mm-hmm. I don't really care. It's nice to get it, but it's not going to sway my opinion. But
does it help you decide if you're going to review it or not if they send you something?
No, not really. We don't care. But back in the day when I was first starting, the economics were such that if I was buying $4,000 worth of equipment every month to test, maybe $3,000, I couldn't make any money.
You're making $1,000 off of your business, and you're spending $4,000 buying new, watches and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. And I would reach out to the brands, and they would basically laugh at me, even though I was getting millions of views a month. They would basically laugh because they just thought it was YouTube, and nobody cared. Now all of a sudden, fast forward 7 years, and it's like, or 6 years, and it's the second most popular website in the world, second most popular search engine in the world. Now people actually care. But back then, nobody cared.
So what happens now when you go to review? How do you decide whether you're going to review a product or not? Because we know that people are sending you all kinds of stuff. I'm assuming you just like refuse shipment if your offices are getting too busy or too full. It's like, hey, I can't take any more stuff. Does this look interesting? Can I use it?
Yeah. Well, now I think it's about economies of scale. Now that's the one thing we've boiled our business down to. So, what are categories that are attractive for us to be in, and what can we kind of rinse and repeat, right?
Okay.
So, as an example, I said with the coolers, well, we didn't just buy one cooler, test it, bring the whole team out, and video it, and do all these things. We waited till we had 50 coolers, tested them all at the same time, learned about them all, durability tested them all. You know, we did all the tests at the same time. So we had some economies of scale. You learn about one cooler, then all of a sudden you can apply that to all these other coolers. And we're trying to do that in more categories.
Well, my favorite cooler is actually my 49ers cooler. So I've got a little red cooler with 49ers. It holds like, a couple of cases of something. I mean, but I like it because it's the 49ers, and it keeps my stuff cold. I mean, what's the difference between one cooler and the next? Isn't it just a cooler?
Well, you know, there are a lot of differences in terms of features.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, right, they retain ice. But we're starting to notice that there's basically one dilemma people are faced with. Do you want better ice retention, or do you want to pay less? And so, you know, you can go out and buy a cooler that's $75 from Walmart. It's comparable in terms of size to a Yeti, but it costs you, $300 less, $200 less. And so you either just want the really high quality product, the affordable luxury product Yeti, which you know is going to be fantastic.
Affordable luxury product?
Affordable luxury. Yeah. It's like, it's in that attainable luxury category with like Lululemon, sort of brand.
Okay.
So anyways, you either want that, you buy the cooler once and it's awesome, or you buy the Walmart cooler and you kind of do the mental math and you say, well, it doesn't retain ice for as long, maybe one day less, but how much more ice, how much incremental ice do I need to purchase? How much less durable is it? So we're doing all those sort of things for consumers.
What about like on a Yeti? I mean, some of that or Lululemon, some of that has to do with status.
Yeah.
Does that come into the review at all? Hey, you're going to get a few more looks if you've got the Yeti, or you're not going to embarrass yourself if you don't have that little styrofoam piece of crap ice chest.
Well, I don't think anybody's embarrassed by coolers. At the end of the day, I want cold beer, right? My favorite beer is free beer. My second favorite is cold beer. And so does it hold ice? If it holds ice, you're good. But people still want to know. Like, there's an example. There's a brand called Canyon. and they search incredibly well. They've been around probably since before Yeti, but they're a little bit less known, and they make an amazing cooler. So when I put it up against Yeti, Yeti might beat it in one or two things, but it's a very compelling story to say, you know, Canyon is $100 less, the ice retention is equal to Yeti, and it's got a more efficient design in terms of internal space to external size, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned economies of scale, so they send you the 50 ice chests or whatever you make comparison. Oh, you had to buy them?
Oh, yeah.
Even you had to buy ice chests?
Well, I don't want to have to deal with the brands. I think there's probably a handful of brands that sent them.
Okay.
But it always comes with strings attached. When you have to post a video, can they preview it ahead of time? And obviously, we say no to all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, that's a discussion you and I have had many times, you know, as me having a background in distribution of different products. You want whatever is best for your client, right? We were selling to people who were installing cameras and you know, we want to make sure they have the right cameras, but in reality, we're trying to make money as well, right? Yeah. You want to sell a camera where you can have a good margin and so on. Well, you're doing it very differently. You're taking no special kickbacks from manufacturers. No, you're not putting the one on there that is like the one that's going to make you a ton of money. You are doing this strictly from the consumer's point of view.
Yeah, I don't really care. And one of my proudest things is that people oftentimes will search a product name or Yeti or coolers, and they'll put Riznos at the end of it or the Slumber Yard at the end of it, which is our home goods site. And that to me, that's one of my proudest moments because it means that we're building a brand and that people are saying, I'm thinking of a product. Okay, this guy does a pretty good job of telling me whether it's good or not. And to me, that's a lot more valuable than just who pays me the most, stick it up top, try and ram down products down people's throats, because people don't want that.
Well, it's interesting because I think about the money you're walking away from, because people would want to sponsor your show. People sponsor the Mark Haney show. People sponsor a lot of these YouTube channels and so on. But you're saying no to that money, and that's pretty big money.
Yeah, it is. And but it always comes with strings attached. Mm. And I know my wife is probably kicking me and saying, take the money, take it now, huh? We want that vacation. But
I won't do that to my audience.
But there's obviously ethical ways to do things. Like we're setting up a studio, and you sponsor your studio. So we're probably going to get somebody to sponsor the studio, but it's not going to be a brand. It'll be a retailer. It'll be somebody that's adjacent to the category, but not the category itself.
Well, you mentioned home goods. So you're looking at what products are most searched, which I guess is which products are going to help you, the consumer, the most.
Yep.
What else is hot? What else are you looking at?
Well, there's a few categories that we love. So there's some niches within electronics that we really like. And, you know,
is this secret sauce where you're not supposed to tell anybody?
Oh, no. Okay. No, I mean, you could just go to our YouTube channel or our website and find it out. So, you know, there's stuff that people it's a little bit more technical. And so a lot other people can't get the economies of scale to do it. So they either produce lackluster content, or they don't do it at all. So as an example, like Garmin GPS watches, they're incredibly time intensive to test. But at this point, I know I'm like the back of my hand. So, so now that's a really good category. Same thing with like true wireless headphones. They search through the roof. They don't pay very great, but they search through the roof. And so it's kind of like the Walmart model where, you know, we can do more videos and make it up on volume.
Well, you said Slumber Yard. Is that sleep stuff?
What's that? It's sleep stuff. We're starting to get into like couches and stuff now. Couches, other sleep adjacent categories like mattress toppers, sheets, pillows, bed frames.
Interesting. So find a bed frame that'll. How do you test out a bed frame?
Well, there's a lot
of
ways.
You're recently married.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things. Like you joke about that, but we do all sorts of things like squeak tests, setup test, teardown tests. Weight limit tests, jumping on it, will it be fine for kids to jump on it? There's a lot of things. There's people want to know about this stuff.
Well, okay, so we've talked a little bit about YouTube and how to win in online, and I could go all day on that stuff, but what I'm sort of wondering is building these businesses. What I see as a game changer for you is when you brought on Matt, right? I invested into the company, you bring on Matt, you decide to move out of your parents' garage, and then things just took off from there. I mean, your business is, it's gone gangbusters since you brought on, since you started building a team. Yeah. The solopreneur did it a lot faster with the team.
Well, I mean, you know Matt. Yeah. Matt is one of the smartest people I know. He works. He is up at 5 a.m. I'm getting emails at 5 a.m., which means he's probably up at flat 5 a.m. or like just a little bit before. And he doesn't leave until I leave at like 7 o'clock. He works Monday through Sunday. He is by far the hardest worker I know. It's a little bit frustrating, actually. So, I mean, you kinda,
he's outworking you.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think you're I'm a pretty hard worker. But he is on another level. So clearly I got lucky to have a friend like that, that he compliments what I do too. So he knows finance just as well as I do, probably better now, technically in terms of working on a computer, Excel, and all these other programs. He's really good. So he was able to take a lot of things off my plate and allow me to do what I do best, which is I'm really good at doing the videos and producing content. And so, I mean,
so he basically he takes over everything else that you're not as good at, or maybe it's less efficient.
Yeah, it's so much less efficient for me to do it, or to do it all. You know?
Interesting, because I think around here, so I am that, you know, chief dreaming officer. I bring a lot of passion, but what I don't bring is structure a lot of times. So I bring as much passion as I can to probably the show, whatever I'm doing around here, and it usually creates some kind of mess, and I need to have structure people in my life to kind of clean up after me. Is that the relationship you and Matt have, or is there somebody else in the business that's sort of like pick up the mess, clean up the mess?
Well, I'm fine with cleaning up the mess. I'm not above anything.
Yeah.
But
and I say that more metaphorically. It's like easier to you can make more content and dream up new ideas if you've got somebody to handle the details.
Yeah, and it's a law of economics, right? Or it's a principle of economics, the division of labor. I might be really good at finance, and I might be really good at Excel and all these other programs to know how much money we're making and analytics and all that stuff. I might be good at it, but Matt's better than me. And I'm the best, at least in our office, in terms of doing videos. I'll do 4 or 5 videos in a day without writing a single note down. And that's not braggadocious. Yeah. It's just that, like, that is the one skill I'm good at. So we're trying to actively get me to do more of it.
Yeah.
And obviously that helps us to save money and make more money, because we've got one person that can actually do it more efficiently than probably a lot of people.
What about the over-reliance on you as the entrepreneur? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, well, other people know how to do it. And we can have plenty of other people do the videos. In fact, I'm gone now. I had to leave early, you know, this week because of a family emergency. But so we have other people that can do it. It's just they're not as efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Interesting.
And I had to tell you that, you know, just as an investor in our company, we're pretty diversified. YouTube is helpful for us, but it's not everything to us.
Right. Well, making the decision to diversify, that's kind of an interesting thing where people come in here, we have Hanging with Haney's. I've met with like 4,000 or 5,000 entrepreneurs in the last couple of years. Yeah, it's a lot. And we talk about our stories. And so many times people come in and they're working on 3 businesses, plus they have a part-time job, where you left investment banking, you went all in on something that you had to learn. But I know that with the success that you're having, there's got to be so many opportunities that you're having to say no to, not just the other products, but the other, you know, buying businesses. What do you do when you're super successful to continue to find that focus?
I see businesses all the time. I would love to buy, but I don't want to get distracted. We have a good thing going on, right? I tell you this all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I see all these other things, but I just got to stay focused. Like, things are great. Our team is great. You know, economics are really good for our company right now. And, you know, my lifestyle is getting much better. And even though I have the time, I just feel like we need to stay focused. I think people get distracted too frequently. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Do one thing and try and do it well.
How did you know that, though? How old are you? You're like 30?
I'm 20. I just turned 29.
29. Okay. You're 29. 30, you're 29 years old. And you, I mean, did you read that in a book? Hey, stay focused, pick one thing. I mean, or did you learn that growing up playing sports?
Yeah, there's an old story you hear about in business school. I don't have an MBA, but I majored in business, and it talks about New York cab drivers. I've told you this story before, but New York cab drivers, when they interviewed them, they'd find that on the busiest days, they would meet whatever financial measure they thought was good, and they would leave and they would go home. But then on the slow days, they would work until they met that same measure, which meant more hours. But that's ludicrous. Why not work as hard as you can during the days where it's busy, and then take some leisure time when it's not busy. And that's so that's kind of the principle I'm trying to apply.
Get where the getting's good. So things are good right now. So just get it right now. Is it a land grab? I mean, in certain categories, is it, you know, you think about searchability and stuff. And I would think that if we're in the early days still in YouTube, is it still a land grab? And what else is out there that you might need to grab in terms of other formats?
Well, YouTube, or well, YouTube, Google, Bing, and all these search engines, DuckDuckGo, all of them, they are 100% digital real estate. Mm-hmm. It's real estate online. That's all it is, and it's incredibly important. And our goal is to get Saks Fifth Avenue real estate at bottom dollar prices.
Okay.
And it's totally achievable. So we hear all the stories of Sears and all these businesses, you know, just going online, right? And they're not having physical stores. Well, I mean, the real estate online is just as valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. That reminds me to talk to you about organic search versus paid. You guys really don't pay for like people to find you.
You know, and I think one day that's going to be a growth driver for us. If we can get to a good stage, get something on autopilot, and then start doing some paid search. Mm-hmm. But here's one thing I did want to mention to the audience is that I get maybe once or twice a month, I get somebody that comes to me from a friend of a friend and they say, look, you built an online business. I sell bracelets or I do something and I want to do it online and I want to make money online. And I say, you could go the hard route, which is what we're doing, which is search engine optimization, which is telling Google, we are an authoritative, trustworthy website. Rank our website, rank our YouTube channel organically, just because people are searching for it. But a way to get to the top of the list, and it's becoming increasingly more easy nowadays, is paid search. Mm-hmm. So there's always that dichotomy, whether you should go paid search or SEO. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, just to hold you over while you're building the SEO side, just do paid search. Mm-hmm. Most people have no idea that the first 3 to 4 results on Google are ads. You don't have to have any authoritative site. You don't have to have any good videos, nothing.
Just pay. But you guys aren't doing that.
We're not doing it.
You could throw fuel on your fire if you paid, right?
Well, in certain categories we could. In other categories, we would be underwater.
Oh, so if you're already number one in a category too, why would you pay? Why pay if you're like the first one down?
Yeah,
if you're on page one, why pay? Right?
Yeah, why pay?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess a reason to pay would be that you could get the first position. Right now, we're the first organic position.
Okay.
Not always. Oftentimes, we're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But you know, sometimes we're in the first position. But if you want the true first position, you have to pay. And it's a bidding system, right? And so the more you pay, the higher you go up. But I just think that we might be in some really competitive categories where the economics won't be favorable to us to pay for paid search. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of spaces where they are. I'm talking, and you only pay when somebody clicks. So there's a lot of categories where you might pay $1 every time, or 50 cents every time somebody clicks. If you're selling a product that's $100 and you got a decent conversion rate, you are coming out way ahead.
I'm looking at investing into another YouTube opportunity, and it makes me think about, you know, how do you value a YouTube channel? I know yours is more than that. It's a website, and it's a complete platform. And I guess but people are valuing these media companies in different ways these days. I mean, what's on the horizon? What do you see now in terms of who are the acquirers for these smaller media companies, and how do we value them?
Well, 5 years ago, nobody acquired them. It was why would I buy this thing? And now nowadays, people are realizing how hard it is to build an audience and how valuable that is. So there are a lot of acquirers out there. I think financial buyers are becoming a lot more interested purely because financially it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, these businesses make a lot of, you know.
Those eyeballs have value.
Yeah, but I also think that there are a lot of strategic companies, mainly like dinosaur media companies. And they want to buy something.
You rather think about like McClatchy, right? Yeah. He's got these newspapers, and then they've gone in and invested in other things. Are they the type of these, media companies that are, dealing with print or maybe television or something?
I mean, one day I would love to get in the door at a McClatchy or a Gannett, somebody like that, and say, look at what we're doing. Open your mind.
Yeah.
Like, you ever seen the movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger? What's it called? whatever, where the
Terminator?
Guy... No, the guy pops out of his chest and he's like, open your mind,
Jimmy. Yeah, I've
That's how I feel. Like, I want to shake some of these guys and say, you know, you're doing something, you have an existing business, we compliment that. You could greatly grow our business. Why not do it?
Well, it's interesting. You think about Blockbuster, right? I used to be in the video store business, and then the video stores are gone now. So is that what you see for media? If you were to use your crystal ball, I mean, our newspapers and you know, all the cord cutting, people aren't really watching TV like they used to. People are doing everything with their phone, right? What do you see changing?
Well, it's already happened, right? The newspapers that are going to be around are around. Everybody else is going under. I think newspapers in smaller markets are still very important, right? Local news in smaller cities, it's still going to be around, albeit at a smaller scale. The mid-sized guys are the ones who get hurt. But, you know, I just think everything's moving. It's no surprise. Everything is moving online. Every single thing is going to be online. You're going to get everything online. And I don't even know what to say other than it's digital real estate. And if you search for Hurricane Dorian, that's all a land grab on Google. And I know it was cataclysmic and it was terrible for the folks in Bahamas, but it's big business for weather.com. It's big business for AccuWeather and CNN and all these guys. And yeah.
Yeah. What percentage is on your phone versus, on the computer?
I want to say it's somewhere around like mid 50% to 60%.
Oh, okay, that's
So we're actually redesigning our website, and we're designing it for mobile first. And I think a lot of people are moving that way. So
yeah. So one of the things that people might not understand is that there's sort of an affiliate model, right? The way that you actually one of the ways that you make money is people actually click on something and then they buy it. Can you explain how that works?
Well, it's just like that. It's a referral base. It's affiliate marketing, so it's just marketing revenue. But at the end of the day, if they click and they purchase, then we get paid.
Gotcha.
And it's actually a really dicey space to be in, right? Because we consider ourselves not bought and paid for by any brand, and I don't want money from them at all. But at the end of the day, Amazon or Walmart, somebody's going to pay us, you know, if people make purchases. And we're not naive enough to ignore the fact that people come to our videos to make a purchase decision. So I feel like it's only fair that we get a slice of that, you know? And it's an unfortunate part of our business, but...
Why is it unfortunate?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I'd love to not be involved in any purchasing.
Okay.
You know, but it's the only way to make any money.
Yeah, you gotta pay the bills at some level.
And we don't hide away from it. We in every video, every post we have, we tell people how we make money. We tell people how much money we make from what brand on our website. So if you want to know, you can know. It's all on our website. So we don't want anybody to think ill of us at all. But we just tell them and we say, look, this is our review, whether you liked it or not. If you make a purchase through our links, we get paid, and that helps us out. So if you think that we deserve it, help us out. If you don't, move on to the next.
Well, how do you grow from here? Is it going to be more organic? You know, we talked about making acquisitions, and your business is growing like gangbusters. Is there a thought of changing the way you grow through acquisition or other?
Well, we've got one business now that we actually are seriously considering acquiring. It'd be for the long term, but we know how to take their business to the next level. We think we can get it at an affordable price. But really what we want to do is we use Riznos, our main website and YouTube channel. It's kind of like an incubator. We're going to test out different categories. If they work, we'll spin them off. So right now, as you can tell, we're testing out coolers.
Mm-hmm.
So if coolers work out, we'll spin it off into its own brand.
Ah.
And but we do have one that we're looking at. And I haven't even told you about that yet.
It's probably confidential. It's got to be.
Yeah.
So this is really an interesting thing because you and I have these conversations occasionally, and you're saying, Mark, remember, this is confidential, it's tough for me to do because I like spreading the news about great people and people doing great things. But I mean, what thinking about the crystal ball, right? If you put out the crystal ball for Jeff Rizzo, you're recently married. You guys are located now in Northern Nevada,
the great state of Nevada,
state you're
income
avoiding,
tax-free state of Nevada.
Yeah. You know how tough that was to see my good buddy. Move 2 hours down the road, but I know that it was best for you. I know that it's best overall for the business, so I have to support you in whatever you do. But I mean, pull out the crystal ball. I mean, what do you see, you know, 5-10 years from now? What are you going
to
look like?
I would love to do what we're doing in different categories, build a little bit of a media company. And one day I would love to move on from it.
Mm-hmm.
You told me this. I'd like to put a W up on the scoreboard and move on one day. Yeah. And it's not that I don't love what I do. It's just that I do have other interests. And I'm all in, though. Like, if I had to do this for another 10 years, I'd do it happily because I'm very lucky. But I think we're going to do what we're doing in other categories, even if they take us years and years to build. So as an example, personal finance is probably the most lucrative niche online. Almost nobody makes more, other than platforms like YouTube and Facebook and stuff, at least in the reviews space, personal finance is the pinnacle.
That's interesting.
And it's incredibly hard to get into. Because you're asking to partner with banks and insurance companies, and they're very risk averse, and they don't want to partner with somebody that hasn't done it before or doesn't know what they're doing or that are just hacks. And so we would love to do that, but it takes years to build it, and you have to be able to take a little pain.
Well, it's a regulated industry, right? So is that why people haven't got into it?
Well, there's a lot of people in it, and so there's a lot
it's busy. It's crowded.
It's crowded. It's crowded with big companies, but there's still some space left. And so we're interested in it. We're not going to do it just yet, but that's one that's definitely on our radar. As an example, you know, we would be talking about loans, savings accounts, credit cards, mortgages. So we'd have to build a bigger team. We'd have to have some sort of economies of scale to where we know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And we would need to individually partner with Discover and Visa and all these companies. And that takes a lot, which is why there's a nice barrier to entry. So aside from maybe 15 companies, there's not a whole lot of competition. There's fierce competition with maybe 10, 15 companies. But aside from that, it's hard for little guys to get in because they can't make a dime. Because what does Discover care about this guy that's doing it in his garage? He's not going to make any money.
Good point. Well, the other thing that you and I think about sometimes, and I think about this when you and Matt are, you know, workaholics and you're recently married, you know, Matt didn't have a girlfriend forever
because
he's married to the business. As entrepreneurs, sometimes we sort of like get married to our business in a way. And, you know, it's tough to keep work-life balance. I mean, we talked about getting why the getting's good earlier, but I mean, advice to entrepreneurs out there when they're thinking about how many hours should I be putting into this job? How much should I be married to the job?
Well, I can say one thing. So it might be good for us right now, but I know there's one long-term trend in favor of us. So even if things with the economy turn, I know that the long-term trend of people moving online for advice and purchasing products is in our favor. So we're not just going to shut down. We'll continue to build and build and build and build because I know the long-term trend is in my favor. So for someone else, you have to know that at least that you have a lot of tailwinds for you. Otherwise, you're just spinning your wheels. I would say stay focused. You know, try to think about what other people are doing. Don't reinvent the wheel. We're not reinventing the wheel. But, you know, it is different than a lot of other businesses. And, you know, like I said, it might be good now and I want to push as hard as I can, but we're not going to stop when things turn because there's one giant thing in our favor.
Yeah. You got that tailwind. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. Tonight we have the best of the best party, and some people have heard me talk about this business partners in my backyard, yeah. And so all my business partners are coming over tonight for a little party. Bringing on Marquee Media as one of our partners, and obviously all these companies I'm invested into. I look forward to seeing you tonight.
I'm fired up.
And it's going to be a great weekend. It's probably, today's going to be one of the best days, I think, of my life for a long time. So thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for starting it off right today, Jeff.
Thank you, Mark.